Welcome to episode 110 of the Linux Lugcast. We are an open podcast/lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device. Go to linuxlugcast.com to get the server details, and then join us in the Linux Lugcast room. If you do not want to participate, you can always join us in the listening booth, and you can sit there and listen to it. Listen to us, and we'll just leave you alone. If you need any help configuring Mumble, there is a Mumble how-to on the site that will explain how to set up the desktop client for Mumble. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss, you can always email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com. We have a G+ community site, and we try to be on IRC on Freenode at @linuxlugcast. With us tonight is Mr. 5150.
Howdy, folks.
And Netminer.
Hello, friend.
I don't know if I've said it yet, but I'm Honky Magoo. 50, that was directed at you.
Oh. Well, we have some feedback. The only, I don't think we had any email feedback, did we? But I.
Nope. I was just referencing the things you put in G+.
Yeah. Well, I probably didn't hear you say anything about feedback. I was wondering. It might have been one of those times when you dropped out. But yeah, the only feedback we've had was from me on G+, and I mentioned last show that I had all the parts I needed according to the couple internet YouTube videos that were referenced to build the Ghostbuster Siren, except for the Adafruit soundboard, hardware soundboard, sits in the middle of it. If you don't remember, I don't know if you'd call it a computer because it only does the one task, but essentially it has pins around the outside, and they're meant to attach like button 1, button 2, button 3, I think through button 8. And you load up a SD card with whatever audio clips you want to correspond. So in other words, sound 1, sound 2, sound 3, whatever. Those aren't the exact designations, but you understand, you know, you put like 8 different things on it, and each one is triggered by a different button if you have it hooked up. Now, what I've got, I realized I was looking when it was going to come, and I thought I'd ordered it off of Amazon. And I went back to Amazon and said, nope, you've got all your deliveries. And I looked, and it was still sitting there in my shopping cart. And I think what happened is I thought since I'd gone through these two videos that both used the same card, that I deleted one or whatever. So I thought the one in the shopping cart was an extra. So got it really fast, you know. I don't think it's 2-day shipping, but probably 3-4 days, business days at least. So I got that middle of the week, so I've got no excuse not to be working on that. I really haven't looked that much. I think documentation for this board is all online. There's nothing really in the package. But the board itself is kind of like a Pi Zero that instead of having pins sticking up, you have holes down the sides. But, you know, it also comes with, you know, one of those sets of pins that you can put in. So you change the holes to a pin that sticks up. And then I still have these experimental board kits, you know, both for Raspberry Pi and for a what's the little controller board that's not a Pi? Anyway, you know what I mean. But you know, they come with all, you know, the leads to go into a breadboard and all that kind of stuff. So I'll borrow a couple, you know, I'll borrow some of those to hook this up. And got a couple switches. I may get more switches for more stuff, but if it'll work, I've got one that's a toggle on, toggle off switch. Because I want to use this as, quote, a siren, you know, and I'd be wanting to repeat that same thing on a loop rather than pressing a button and just having it, you know, play once most of the time. So I'd be, you know, I don't know if it'll work. I assume it'll work with a toggle switch rather than just a momentary interrupt switch. But we'll see when I get into that. See if it's documented. But so yeah, and also the filament has come for the Monoprice 3D printer, so I really don't have any excuse to haven't worked with that. But you know, the other thing that has occupied my time in the last week on my show topics, and of course this is media related, but it is not, you know, Linux related. A lot, in fact, a lot of the stuff. Only one of my topics is specifically Linux related this week. And but middle last week, I got mentioned on pre-show or something, or maybe it's post-show last week, which listeners would not have heard. We were talking about media, and I mentioned that I had subscribed to the DC Universe because I was interested in some of the content, like Young Justice, that will be coming rather than to Netflix to DC Universe. They're gonna after a hiatus of a couple years, they're going to do a third season of the Young Justice animated series. They're also doing live action Teen Titans starting the middle of next month and running to the end of the year, and probably anything new that DC has from now on is going to come to the DC Universe. I binge watched all of Batman Beyond, which really has not been available anywhere that I could access it in a series format. There's a bunch of clips on YouTube, and I probably watched all of those, but this is the first time I actually watched full episodes of Batman Beyond. It's one of my, you know, just for watching the clips, it's one of my favorite animated DC series. So I've been watching that, watching some of the animated movies that have been released. Now, a lot of those have been out on Netflix that I've seen before, but some of them haven't been. Or at least I haven't seen them. So, you know, going through that and the other animated Superman and Batman series will probably take me up to the time when Teen Titans begins. Also, I didn't even realize when I subscribed to this, and I haven't really checked it out other than just see that it's available. There are apparently a bunch of the comics. Are, you know, the print comics are there on the service. So you could go back through and, you know, I haven't really read comics in 30 years, probably. We've discussed that ever since they got to where you had to subscribe and, you know, get it every month rather than getting used like I used to. Have not really read comics since I was a kid, so that may change. Then I have availability for it. Of course, I got way more media now than I can consume. But that's probably part of the reason I haven't got many much project stuff done in the last week. I apologize. Okay, my next thing is had a few things going through the mail, United States Postal Service, in the last week, packages, and I was given a tracking number last week. Clicked on the tracking number, or well, went through the U.S. Post Office site. I don't know if I clicked on the tracking number, but it did take me the official. I'm pretty sure, at least it was official USPS site, and their regular tracking thing. And then you click on that. It says, "Yeah, to get tracking information, you have to install this add-on." And I was in Firefox. I said, "Well, that's not good." But I went ahead and did it. Add-on is called Packages. I think eventually I found a way around it. But in a way, it's not bad. It does kind of replace that when you click on the new page icon, where you used to have a bunch of your free a thing and a bunch of frequently visited sites. That's what came up when you hit the plus button to get a new tab. This, well, for one thing, there's still a search bar in the center, but if you type in that, it takes you to Yahoo, and I can't find any way to select a different search service. Since it's Firefox, I still have a search window in my toolbar, so I've been using it. Also, the thing that I don't like about it, it's this really big long address, takes forever to come up. So if you hit the plus, then if you want to type in a URL, you've got to wait for that page to load, which takes, rather than being instantly, as is the default, you've got to wait 15 seconds for the page to load, at least on my slow internet. So I let that persist till this evening that I could tell you about, and right after the show I am going to uninstall that plugin so I can go back to normal. And like I said, I eventually found, and I'm not sure how, where, but a way to, well, I guess one of the ways I tracked is I loaded up Chrome instead of Firefox, and it didn't have anything like that. So I guess that is the way I got around it. So I don't know, unless I got on some kind of phishing site, that is bad, that the government agency says, "Yes, you have to install this third-party plugin to track your package."
Yeah, that is pretty bad.
So if anybody comes back, maybe, don't know what you're talking about, never had that experience with Firefox, then maybe I did get fished or something, but and moved over, But I don't think it's a harmful plugin. Like I said, just bring up that new page, and if you want to type in a URL, you have a significant wait. So just for that, I want to get rid of it. This next topic is one I want to run past Joe. I was away from keyboard for this week's tilts, but the week before, they had a long discussion about. We're sick and tired of Facebook and Google Plus and them using our information and tracking us, and we're all trying to move everybody over to MeWe.com. That's MeWe.com. So I checked out. First, I wasn't sure what they were saying. I was looking at wee-wee.com or something. That wasn't, obviously wasn't right. Finally, figured out it was MeWe, and but it what I was struck with is to register first. It asks for first and last name. Now, I don't know if they verified. I mean, everybody, if I were to use this as a replacement for G+, everybody knows me in the community as 5150. I mean, there's a lot of people know me by the name. It's on my birth certificate as well. But, you know, I'm not sure it'd be confusing enough to some people. You know, they wouldn't be able to find me if I were to use my given name. So, and I don't know if it will take an obvious handle. Of course, that's how I got around it on G+. Fortunately, I already had a G+ identity as 5150 through my Linux email account. So during that first couple of years of G+, when it, you know, it refused a handle versus a, you know, you had to have a real name. Since I was already established with that name, that the, you know, my handle, it went ahead and took me that, you know, I didn't have any hassle on that where other people did. So that would be one thing that puts me off. Second thing is that they asked for, of course, all the guys on Tilts are using their real names, I believe. Well, Flying Rich, but everybody knows who he is. And everybody knows who Gorkon is. So, yeah, so people wouldn't have any trouble finding them using their given names. But the next field is, and it's required, a telephone number. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think Facebook has my phone number. I'm not sure. I do know because I'm on Facebook and other people have got their phone numbers in there. My address book has a lot of people's phone numbers that I would not correspond with by phone. I'm wondering, well, how do I get that? Oh, Facebook, you know, because Facebook you can use, especially if you're starting out, you know, if you install the phone app first, you know, it either identifies you by an email external to Facebook or by a phone number or by both. And so if it's got your phone number, then anybody who you friended on Facebook, they've got your phone number too. And like I said, I go through and I see people in my contacts and there's a phone number, even though I've never called them, never asked for their phone number. Seems a little weird. And I've mentioned before, you know, it also freaks me out when I see a crossover between G+ and Facebook, you know, suggesting on G+ that maybe I should follow somebody that is linked to my Facebook account, not to my G+. Because generally, I keep the Linux and people I know online relationships, that's in G+. People I know from school or whatever here locally, that's on Facebook. And I am not comfortable with the two mingling. So, not that I haven't followed people on Facebook that, you know, I know from online, a few, but, or friended them, but, you know, I want that to be my decision, not something that keeps popping up because two separate companies are sharing information. That's, you know, that's a separate topic and probably a reason not to do business with either Google or Facebook if one could avoid it. The other kind of creepy thing that I've, that I've had with me. And this is opt-in, but they're like, yeah, we're service, and we don't know who you know that might be on here. So to streamline that process, if you would just give us a copy of your entire contact list, then we could look through our database and see who's already on here that you know, and let you hook up with them. And that's more information than I want to be giving a service. Not like I'm not giving Google, doesn't get to see my con get to see my contact list, because they can see my phone, they can see, and like I said, people got their phone numbers on Facebook. So am I being too paranoid about privacy? Because it's probably information that I've already turned over to other social media services, but just the explicitness of them wanting this information, makes me think, yeah, if we're gonna go to a different third party service, is this the one we really want to go with?
I'm not sure there's a good right answer to that, because there's some people who also went to Mastodon, and I like Mastodon just fine, but I mean it's and I'm pretty sure Mastodon isn't selling your information, but it's I don't get the same thing out of Mastodon that I would out of like G Plus.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I'm not sure I really, yeah, there's some things that if G Plus was to go away suddenly, which I guess it always could, but I think there's too many people who use it for that to be a real possibility. It's not as big as Facebook, but I think they've got enough people on there who would complain if they were to take it away. Yes, they're intrusive, but that's those two services is where everybody is. I'm not sure, oh, we're going to be the rebels and move on to this new service. So you've got 10 guys out there talking to each other, or 10 people, 20 people, 50 people. I mean, I spend too much time on social media as it is now. I am not looking to add another social media platform. Yes, I've got a Discord and I've got Mastodon, but they're limited. They're limited to one community each. That they're using that, and I don't. I don't see any of this big push, the greater Linux community, moving over. I mean, I guess, everybody who's moving to MeWe, then deleted their Facebook and G Plus accounts, then the stay current with those people. I guess I'd have to just to follow them. But, I spend too much. There's a lot of stuff goes on there I miss, because I just don't have enough time to sit there every day and scroll through all the updates on everything.
Yeah, and I've kind of I never used G Plus as like a social outlet. I've kind of just used it as kind of a almost as my new news aggregator. But basically, that's where I get any Linux news is from there.
Well, right, me too. 90% of the links that I would post, are stuff that I pulled. Somebody's posted it in G Plus first. I've tried to get in some Linux news lists, but still, most of the stuff is something I found on G Plus.
Right, and I find that I don't get that same experience with any other social media outlet.
No, I agree. I mean, I follow the technical people on G Plus, and that's where they post the tech stuff. Most of them don't post, even people who I've got a connection with on both Facebook and Google Plus that are, my online friends and all that, like you guys. When the when somebody in the community posts something technical, they post it over to G Plus. They don't, usually the stuff on Facebook is, this is what's happening in my family life, whatever. And not something, because same as me, they've got a combination of both family, school friends, other, friends in the neighborhood, and technical people that they know. And if they post tech, in Facebook, 89% of the people that follow them aren't going to understand what they're talking, what that's about. So that stuff is over on G Plus.
Exactly.
Okay, lastly, like I said, I'm sorry, I didn't even have good, very many good links, much less not getting anything done this week. But found a YouTube video, and I didn't know it had a relationship to Linux when I started watching it. But apparently, oh, probably 20 years ago or so, it's been a week since I've seen it, so it's a while back, guy in Europe did more as an art installation, but he developed hardware to allow him to actually encode video on a vinyl record. Now, it was low resolution video, wasn't very long. Also, it only had a mono audio channel rather than stereo to make everything as compressed as possible. Like I said, low resolution. So what you have is a normal record player, and then you plug the audio out into this decoder that he had built, and then you usually take composite video out to a CRT, and it was black and white or grayscale mono. And you weren't really doing like a movie or something. You're doing, at least the ones that are out now are like music videos. And like I said, it was an art thing, proof of concept, interesting little project, but not some, even though he sold these, they were not really seriously intended as a consumer item. He might have sold half a dozen or a dozen or whatever. Apparently, a couple years ago, somebody came upon that and decided to redo it. And I assume it was never said in the video how much one of these decoders cost. I assume it is not inexpensive. But somebody actually is building these decoders. Again, using the same tech, and really the only content available for it is you got to buy it from the same company, and it's like four music videos on like a 45 small not a full size album, and one side's just regular audio of the video. Of the music video, and then the other side is the combined audio and video, and still it's got composite and HDMI out, but for the resolution, it's still low resolution composite or equivalent is what you're going to get. And I guess the reviewer, like I said, reviewing it just to be reviewing it, not like he said, "Oh yeah, this is great tech. I got to have this." It's just like, apparently somebody with the resources to be able to afford, yeah, I'm just gonna buy, buy this and so that I can make a YouTube video about it. Oh, welcome, Joe.
Hey guys, sorry I'm extremely late.
Yeah, would you circle back around to it? Maybe now that you're here, there was a discussion we did that I wanted to get your opinion on. But I said, partway through this video, and Joe, we're talking about this guy bought like this. Well, I guess guy did it as sort of an art exhibit years, not that long ago, but showed that you could put audio and video together on a regular vinyl record album with, and play that on a record player. And he sold a converter that would plug into the audio out of the record player, and then, then have the audio to speakers and the video to a composite connection and plug that into a monitor. And somebody's come back out with that again. But the thing is, when the guy who's doing the video, about 12 minutes into it, he opens up the case, and inside the case is a Res Pi. Now that's more, I think, doing the operating system. It didn't say which operating system. I assume, Raspbian, but they didn't really say. But there's also another board, a custom board specifically to do the decoding, and it sort of connects to RPI inside the case. Just has a male USB right on the board, and they're situated in the case. They're plugged into, one USB to the other, and side by side in the case. And really, there isn't much else in there. That's where, it comes around in a circle and comes back to this show. This is, like Doors always said, the Raspberry Pi, great opportunity for someone to use that to market value-added products. And I did send that link over to the Mini PC show, hopefully we'll have another Mini PC show released one of these days.
Right, Dort, it's been a little while.
Dort, that is for your ears. I know you occasionally listen to this show, and you guys could probably do the topic a lot more justice than I have. But, I just found that was an interesting use of a Raspberry Pi, because this is a little boutique. Like I said, said before Joe came on, I don't know what they're charging for this, but I rather imagine it's significantly more than the price of a Raspberry Pi, because I can't imagine they're selling more than a few dozen of these, because it's a very boutique item. Hey, look at this cool thing, which is essentially what, apparently the guy who's doing that YouTube channel has enough money to buy a deal that says, hey, look at this cool thing. And there's only four music videos on 45 record albums that are available from the same company. And I know I've said that, but that's sort of the benefit for Joe, who's just joined us. So it's not something that somebody's going to get and, like somebody get an old LaserDisc and go look at the thrift shops for LaserDisc, which I did have. Somebody gave me a disc player, and I got one, one off eBay, and I think I've mentioned this before, and everything we get now on old movies or whatever on DVD or whatever are remastered and everything and perfect. And I mean, this one, I think they looked like they recorded it off of TV. I got Lawrence of Arabia, I think it was. And, I mean, it had, if you remember back in the 70s, and they would play, you know, they would play old movies on TV. You had all the streaks running up and down just because the film had been played so many times it was worn out. And that's what they did, is they just sit film around the TV stations to do the old movies. You know, so, you know, we take digital remastering for granted. But, yeah, at least that you could have got moved, you know, got caught in. But, I mean, this thing, you buy the unit and you get the only content that's ever going to be created for it. And that's it. It's just completely a conversation piece. So that's links in the show notes. I think it's worth taking a look, especially, you know, if you're interested in doing commercial products with a Pi. And this is an interesting example of it, but completely no practical use in the real world.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd be selling it cheap. I mean, it might be fairly boutique, but that's still man hours there. Yeah, I mean, but at least $200-$250.
Oh yeah, I would say, you know, you've got a custom case, a custom board, all the work to go, you know, custom decoder board, all the work that went into all that. Yeah, I don't see how you could sell these for less than $200 or $300.
And like you're saying, it does sound like a really cool idea, just zero practical purpose, unless you were going to do your own LP recordings and you wanted to use it to obfuscate data.
Right. This is what was mentioned, you know, I think everything's been published. So if you had the equipment to cut your own vinyl, then you could do that. But how many people have that equipment?
Right. And I do have a question, a random question that popped up while you were talking. Could you do laser disc recording in, like, real time? I mean, I remember laser discs vaguely from when I was a child, but I don't remember anybody ever recording TV shows or anything like that on a laser disc in their homes the way they would with a VCR.
No, I don't think there was anything. Well, first, LaserDisc, one thing that's mentioned in this article that I either didn't know or forgotten, LaserDisc was analog, not digital.
Like I said, very young when that was out.
Right. Well, years ago, and of course, this is one of the things I got lost in the fire. I acquired this LaserDisc because the school where I did computer maintenance at, they were throwing it away. I mean, for years, there were like films, you know, educational films on LaserDisc. And what freaked me out was it came with the educational disc that was in there. I was on biology or something. And I plugged it in, and English was coming out of the right speaker and Spanish was coming out of the left. And I was explained to me, no, it's a dual language and it's not stereo. So, you know, you only plug in one speaker at a time.
Hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting, at least for the educational videos. But like I said, I bought one disc off of eBay and it was like $15 or whatever. I mean, you know, you'd think you'd go in the thrift store and see those things for a dollar, but no, it's, you know, because.
Yeah, no, it wasn't very popular for very long when LaserDiscs were out and mainstream, and they really didn't, you know, cap out on the market or anything. So I'd be surprised if it was easy to find LaserDiscs right now.
You can find them, but like I said, they're not as cheap as you know. They're, you know, at the time, well, VCRs and Betamax, I think followed LaserDisc within about 2 years, and then you had the rental, places to rent them instead of having to buy stuff. But a friend of mine in college got the LaserDisc, but so much better quality, he said, but of course, wasn't that long after that that you. Oh, I guess 10 years. But I mean, the LaserDisc was probably dead before that, long before DVDs came out. But then you had DVDs that, and now we got Blu-rays. Though I personally really can't tell the difference.
It also took a really, it took a really long time for DVDs to take over the market, just because of how expensive it was initially to make even CDs. And then, yes, there were DVDs, but VHS was cheap as hell.
Exactly. So like I said, this thing was developed, I think, the first time. I don't know if you missed that. It was originally designed as sort of an art exhibit, and the guy originally had a decoder, and probably he sold 10 of them or something. And then this thing that they've got now as a product is somebody rediscovered, that technology and started building them. But like I said, I'd be amazed if they build 100 of them, so they have to be expensive enough that it's been worth their while to do it. I mean, these people, it is still sort of an art installation, but they're doing it for profit.
Then yeah, they're probably not doing it at $250 a pop either. It's probably closer to $1,000 a pop.
That would be my estimation. If I don't think they're mass producing these, so I bet it'd have to be that much to make a profit. So, mad props to the guy who bought one of these just to do a YouTube video, which really would have to be, or I guess when his rich butt came over, he says, "Okay, hey, come look at this," But other than that, I have bought stuff where, it might be something stuff that, I mean, something that might push me over the top once in a while is making a purchase. Well, I could do a show on this or something. But nothing that expensive. No way.
I hear you. The other day I picked up a Gigabyte Bricks mini PC for $25. One of the original early version A8 ones.
Okay. Do you have a link to that you could throw in the mumble chat and I can put there in the show?
Come out here. Oh,
hold on. Let me see if I can find a link for it. Give me just a minute.
Okay. I need to be away from keyboard for a second anyway.
Okay. I pasted it in there.
Where did you paste it? I'm looking for it, and I didn't see it.
In the mumble chat.
Last thing I see in there is Honky Magoo's and Archer 72 Disconnected, who was in the listening booth.
Yeah, right after that I pasted, and it shows it there for me.
It's not there for me either.
Do you have the IRC channel open?
No, give me just a second.
I would not think that it would. If you can join the channel, it would take any special permissions to be able to post in the chat, but I can ask Delwyn when I send him a message this weekend.
No, I don't believe it's a message issue. I mean, I think if he like accidentally highlighted your name or something like that, when he sends a message, when he puts something in the chat, it would be only you see it. But obviously, in this case, it wouldn't be you because you can't see it either.
You didn't see. Okay. You didn't see either one of the two that I posted? Hold on just a second. Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, I see that you joined Hash Linux Lugcast. If you put it in there, I'm certain I can see it. There we go.
Okay, I posted in both.
And how much did you say you paid for it?
$25. No RAM, no M-SATA, but I've ordered the M-SATA. I found some old RAM that I had lying around, and I was using a USB hard drive. Now, I was having problems with the USB hard drive, and then one of the updates kind of bricked it. But since I got an M-SATA coming in the mail tomorrow, I'm not even going to try and fix it. I'm just going to do a reinstall tomorrow. I think I also need to upgrade the RAM to make it more usable. Chrome is having some problems once you get a few tabs going. The multitasking is a bit abysmal, but a lot of times it doesn't look like it's a RAM issue either. It just looks like it's Chrome eating the processor.
And I see a Radeon graphics card. Have you tried gaming on it at all, or is that too much for it?
I might try some of that after I get the M-SATA set up. I definitely want to get the PS1 emulator running on it and play some Armored Core Master of Arena. But I definitely not going to try out new games on it. I might, on the other hand, do Steam streaming. That could work out pretty well on it. Have it set up on my gaming laptop inside and then just be outside and stream the game into the garage and play it there.
Unfortunately, if anybody is looking at this for a to set up a router, it's only got one LAN port. But of course, you know, for most of us, you know, USB 2 is going to run. You know, if you had a USB 2 to Ethernet card to put in, it would run faster than, you know, our uplink is anyway.
Yeah, well, it's got a USB 3.0 slot as well. And I do have an adapter for the 10-100-1000 adapter. And I do have my internet connection does go up to 200 Mbps. So,
yeah, mine that used to be capped at about 3 has been occasionally up to about 6. The trouble is it also dropped to less than 1, and I have to go in and reset the router and the uplink. So I'm thinking of changing providers.
And I'm more concerned with internal networking speeds, and I'm somewhat limited in the garage since I can't run an Ethernet cable out here from inside without annoying the wife. And I'm not willing to pay the $200 per drop to wire my house.
Now, where did you say you found this? At like a thrift shop, or did you find it online?
Oh, Facebook Marketplace. The guy was originally offering it for $60 with the M-SATA drive in it. But like the next day, I guess he pulled the M-SATA drive and then dropped the price down to $40. And then I kind of sat and waited and see what other people thought about it. And it got down to about $25. And I was going to be in that part of town anyway, so I went and picked it up.
Can't complain about that.
Yeah. I got to keep my eye on the Facebook Marketplace then.
Yeah. I rarely see computing equipment every once in a while. If it is, it's like a monitor they want. Well, no, I have picked up monitors for cheap here locally, but not, you know, nothing like this that I've ever seen.
Well, right now I got my eye on this HiGoLe, that's HiGoLe. Pocket PC that a guy is selling. He doesn't have the charger for it, but it's sitting at $90 on the marketplace. And I went and looked the price up online, and anybody that's still selling it, because it's two years old, almost 3 years old, is selling it around $144. And it's basically a little Windows tablet with a Z8350 quad core processor, the Intel Cherry Trail.
Okay, I think HiGold's the same company that made the computer I was using as a PFSense router before it got zapped by lightning.
Yeah, it's just another little mini PC that I'd like to fool around with, and so I need to make sure, one, that I have extra money, and I do kind of want it to come down in price a little bit.
Yeah, they're new, at least they're for they're, you know, oh, I got mine less than 200, I think, but still, it's not incredibly cheap.
Yeah, and at work they have a strict no outside laptop policies, but you're allowed to bring in tablets, which it seems like a Dane policy to me, considering what tablets can do these days.
Well, that's it. They probably don't realize what a tablet can do.
Or the policy is a few years old and from the time when tablets couldn't do crap more than your phone could.
Right. Well, for that matter, you can do a whole bunch of phone these days.
Yeah, I mean, I could put a Linux operating system on my phone. As a matter of fact, I have a Linux operating system on my phone to use in as a VM, but yeah. I don't understand the policy, and I don't even know if the policy is actually enforced anymore. Oh, and I know I mentioned it on the other show. I got the hybrid graphics working on my laptop finally.
Oh, great. Yeah, I was away from keyboard this last Wednesday, so I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it turned out to be a problem not with the NVIDIA drivers, but with the Intel 3D acceleration drives interfering with the NVIDIA graphics card. So after I shut off the built-in Intel 3D acceleration, the NVIDIA graphics loaded right up.
Nice.
Has made great improvements to the graphics. And also, I once again, I mentioned this on the other show, with using Proton on Steam to play Windows games. I mean, even Windows games that no longer play on Windows will play on Steam using Proton. And smooth, no jittering, no stalling out, nothing.
Nice. I'm going to have to start. You were here for the last show, and if anybody wants to go back to show 109 in the show notes. I have a link to, you know, you have the official approved 17 games. I think it's still standing at that. They're fairly old. Steam acknowledges plays through Proton on Linux. But I already mentioned this tonight that there is a website that maintains a list of user tested games, and a lot of those are not as old. And a few of them that I think I have, I need to start downloading them at night when I'm not using the connection.
Yeah, I need to take a look at that list and see if I can add a couple of things to it. Because I really don't see in any of the beta settings for Proton where you can make adjustments or anything like that. So it either works or it doesn't, as far as I can tell.
No, I guess the company I bought, I think I'd looked at HiGold, but it's HiStow or something, HYSTOU, is where I got my router PC. I still need to replace that instead of using the consumer router that I have. Also, probably not something that should be mentioned on the show, but every once in a while, I found that easily because a week ago, about every 6 months, I get an email from a company representative, let me know the company's still out there and has products and whatever, and seeing if they can sell me something. And let's just say If I didn't know it was serious, I would have thought this guy's name, he's got to be kidding. And I'm not even going to put that on the IRC. This is just going into the mumble chat for just us.
What was the spelling on that?
It's YSTOU.com is the name of the company.
Hi what?
HYSTOU.com. I'm not sure I could pronounce that even if I wanted to. And I put the name of the latest person from the company to contact me in the mumble chat. And that's totally serious, I think. And for the people who are scratching their heads listening, let's just say if someone were to do something completely culturally insensitive and make up an Asian name, this would be that name. Though, I think the guy's got to be serious.
I don't know. Long Duk Dong from 16 Candles has got to be pretty high on that list.
See, I was trying to avoid just that sort of cultural insensitivity on the air. But, okay, yes.
I didn't come up with the name, I'm just saying.
Wonder if anybody's gotten that mini PC yet.
No, I don't think they were going to come out for quite some time. I think when I did the Kickstarter, it was going to be like a year.
No, the estimated delivery, because I'm on the website right now, the estimated delivery is still listed as September 2018.
Okay, well, it's September. I'll keep my fingers crossed. Well,
they should be updating and letting you know, because it's also listed still as the prototype stage.
Yeah, maybe it's the Atari that was going to be a year to come. And I have heard that second generation Nintendo Entertainment System has been very disappointing, they say. Oh, yeah. Joe, like I said, we'd kind of covered the topic. But since you were on Tilts 2 weeks ago, I don't think you participated much in the discussion, but I did want to get your take on it. When I was listening to the show 2 weeks ago, I said this last Wednesday, I was away from keyboard, but Dan and Joel were talking about moving from, and Pat, I guess, we're talking about moving from platforms like G+ and Facebook to MeWe.com. And I finally found the site and looked at it. And I wasn't really too – I thought just the initial sign up was more intrusive than I'm comfortable with. First, I don't know if they'll let me use a handle because they asked for first and last name. And not that I need to obscure, the name on my birth certificate from my online presence, because there are plenty of people who do know me by both names. If people were to go try to find me on a new service to follow, they wouldn't know that other name to use. They would be looking for 5150. And if MeWe doesn't let me sign up as 5150, I don't know if they go back and check like G+ did and say, oh, that's obviously a handle, you can't use that, then it wouldn't be much good to me. Secondly, everybody for a phone number, and that's a required field. And, you know, maybe they want some way to verify, you know, that you do exist in your... and that you're a person, but, you know, since, well, I guess Google has that because they do a at least an option for two-factor authentication. Facebook, for a lot of people, they use phone numbers to log in rather than email. I think you can do it either way or both. So they, you know, they may well both know my, have my phone number. But I don't know. I'm not comfortable with that being a required field to create an account. Third, it is opt-in, but they're saying, oh, since we're a new service and we want to connect you to people who you already know, and we don't know who that you know, and you probably won't know who that you know is a MeWe customer. So we give you the option to upload your entire contact list to us, you know, so that we can look for our database and find the, you know, match you to people in your contact list and have everything set up. And again, that kind of sounds a little creepy to me. I'm, you know, if I were to jump to another service, that I'm just not sure this is the one I'm comfortable with. I know you really didn't contribute a whole lot to that MeWe discussion, but I just was looking for your thoughts.
Well, I tend to agree with you. If you're going to do something like that, then why not just stick with Facebook? I mean, any other service that requires that kind of information from you or requests that kind of information from you can easily just turn around and sell it. Most in their EULAs, they may now say that, yeah, we'll protect your data, but they have the option of changing their terms of service at any time.
Right, and it's not just that, you know, them selling the data. I'm not really comfortable with them knowing the data.
Yeah, it's understandable too. But really, once again, no different than Google, no different than Facebook, no different than MySpace back in the day. Granted, you can create a essentially throwaway email account and set that up, but you're definitely not going to want to give them your contact list at that point.
Right. I'm just thinking we could do one thing that's a little better.
Yeah, but if you want it to be accessible to other people and searchable and basically connected to the rest of the planet as opposed to just one small network, then you're going to need something like this. Otherwise, you're using Mumble or Rocket Chat or anything else that you can set up yourself that isn't connected to anybody that you don't allow on. What's your opinion?
Well, like I said, you know, I'd rather be able to create my own identity, you know, rather than having them explicitly know my name. And, you know, like I said, it's a necessity. If people want to find me, they're going from the Linux community and podcast listeners, they're going to look for me as 5150, not by the name that's on my birth certificate. So I know most of the guys on Tilts, exception of Flying Rich, you know, and everybody knows he's Richard Hughes. I hope so, or I just outed him. And everybody knows Gorkon, you know, Gorkon is Joel. And, you know, and all the guys on that show are not using a handle. So, you know, if they're going to say no handles, then it's not going to do me much good.
Right, generally, but they also say that people are supposed to use their true names on Facebook, but I still know of a few people named Bruce Wayne. So it should be fairly easy. Ouch, I keep getting flash flood alerts and they're really loud. But it should be fairly easy to, on this website, put your first name as 50, put your last name as 150, and then use whatever email account you want, create a password, and log in. They have absolutely no way of knowing that that's not your real name.
Right, and I doubt if they're actually calling people to verify. But it may, you know, they may have a way of checking, well, is that a real phone number, and kicking you if it's not.
It does say email or mobile number, so just use an email.
Oh, does it? I had read that to be you have to have your mobile number on there. Well, if it's email, yeah, I could use an email that matches my online handle, and you're right. Unless they have an algorithm goes through and says, hey, that's not a real name. And people do change their names to weird things. So, you know, if they ever did contact me, says, no, yeah, that's my name. I had it changed legally.
Yeah. What if you don't have a mobile phone?
Well, it does say email or mobile number. And if you have a touch-tone phone, you could have a mobile number in like 5 minutes for free. Don't know how long you'll have it for, because Google could at any time completely get rid of the service, but the option's there for now and has been for a long time.
You're right. It does say email or mobile number. Yeah, I guess I could deal with that.
But before you know, do something like that for an online persona, the social network would really need to take off first, and it would have to be the new Facebook or what Google Plus was supposed to be before you should really jump into it.
Well, of course, that would be the argument that Dan and Joel would make is, well, if nobody joins it, then it won't ever take off. You know, if everybody in the Linux community joins it, you know, and we don't care who else gets on there. I mean, it's definitely a chicken and an egg scenario. Like I said before, if all of a sudden, you know, a whole bunch of people deleted their G Plus accounts, and the only way I could contact it was through MeWe, then probably I would jump on just to have that way to contact them. But, you know, I don't want to deal with checking, you know, a dozen different social sites a day, you know, because people are spread out all over them.
Yep.
What we need is for the social sites to go kind of the way of email, because, you know, at first, you know, if you want to talk to somebody on Prodigy, you had to have a Prodigy email account. And, you know, if you want to talk to Prodigy account, and that's all you could talk to, and, you know, all the other dial-up communities that were there at that time, you know, you'd have to create an account on each if you had to talk to on a different network, and then all of a sudden email all became one thing, and it didn't matter what server you were on. Once the rise of the internet, all, you know, any email could contact any other email. And, you know, maybe that's what we should push for, is just, you know, some sort of generic social network that doesn't really matter what platform you're on.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It's just, how do you convince all of the various social networking sites that they need to work together with their competition?
Well, I guess, and, you know, it never has worked this way. I mean, it wouldn't work until the users just insisted on it. And there's probably been no push. You know, most people on Facebook don't know if there is anything else. They knew there used to be something called MySpace that nobody uses anymore. But I would say 75% of the people who use Facebook have no idea that Google Plus exists, which is, you know, Google's problem. They wanted to be Facebook, nobody had, you know, other than us techies, nobody had a real incentive to move over or add that. So, you know, it's like we've talked about the devices like the Google Home and the Echo and Mycroft. You know, there really needs to be an interface between all of them so that they all talk. You know, it doesn't matter really which physical device you have. It's all, you can do cross-platform things, and there has been some move towards that. I think Apple, Apple's device talks to Amazon's or something like that. I remembered an article like that a while back. So I think eventually that may come because people will be, they want to talk to grandma, but grandma picked a different device than what they did. So, I think that's something the consumers may insist on eventually is, we don't want to be segregated by what company we bought the device from. And maybe social networking will eventually get that way, though I don't see it happening anytime soon. Okay, this was talked about this a little bit before the show, but we really wanted to set it for the show. Or I guess that there's been a push to change the code of conduct for the Linux kernel. Things have been contentious. Apparently, if you look at the comments in the code, there's a lot of politically incorrect words in there. Some people think there is a hostile, sometimes, that female developers experience a more hostile experience in kernel development than the male developers. And, if you're somebody that bothers just, maybe just the bad words in the code or stuff or in the comments constitute a hostile environment. But I think it's more than that. And I guess they've moved. Well, Hawkey should really be talking about this, but they've moved. It's his link, but they're moving from just the general idea of be excellent to each other, which maybe has not been, fully realized because kernel development has been a meritocracy. And the guys in charge, if you submit something and Littus looks at your code and he thinks it's not very good, he had to tell you that outright and in no uncertain terms that your code was no good and was not going to be included in the kernel and was not letting anyone down, Lee, And because this change in policy, Linus has said, this is something we need to do, but it's going to take me a while to wrap my head around it. So I'm going to back away from the Linux kernel for a while till I can get my head straight with this.
Yep, and I'm really hoping that him backing away from it is not going to have any huge effect on the Linux kernel or on the future development of the Linux kernel. I think it's kind of odd that it took this long to, I don't know whether something changed for him personally in his life that all of a sudden this takes effect, but I mean, what people are saying is not anything new, so I don't know why it would all of a sudden click, Look, he's been in charge of this, and he's had his way, and people don't necessarily agree or disagree, whatever. But how is this going to affect the future?
Well, apparently, what they've switched over to is something called the Contributor Covenant, and Lettuce's daughter has signed on to back the Contributor Covenant. I don't know if she has much to do with the Linux kernel itself, other than who her father is. I don't know if she... I've never heard anything about whether she codes or not. Assume probably, considering who her father is, that she's a developer, especially becoming involved in this, and that she may have had quite a bit of influence in bringing Linus on board. And this is from the Verge article that is Honky put in the show notes.
So the code of conduct is apparently a Git file, and that's what that link is on in the Verge file and the Verge thing there.
And you know, people, it remains to be seen. Some people said, you know, is it are all developers? Because you know, it's not like Linus was the only one. Is everybody good? You know, everybody going to turn on a dime here and go along with this code of conduct, or are things just gonna go on as they have? And since the advisory board is all guys, I guess, you know, that if somebody makes a complaint, is actually saying anything going to be done? And of course, what, you know, what we should be worried about, I guess, as far as you say, things change and probably things should change, but you know, does this mean that they're going to drive off good developers because of political correctness? So, you know, it's going to be, it's been a meritocracy, and the people contribute good code, you know, could probably do no wrong. And, you know, are they going to run people off or ban them that have been making good contributions to the kernel because they violated this policy? And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a more polite policy in the community. I just, you know, I'm just saying if there are people who are just adamantly opposed to this, but they're top kernel contributors, is that going to slow down Linux development? And is it worth that? I guess probably, you know, since it's neat. Probably needs a change. I guess probably it is, but we'll see what happens. There article says that, you know, just saying that they don't tolerate harassment, is that too ambiguous? You know, is any criticism going to be considered harassment? You know, because there, you know, things have been pretty blunt, you know, there was a tendency, you know, you know, kind of it being like a playground is, you know, not only does your code stink, but you look funny and you smell bad, or, you know, something probably a lot worse than that. But I mean, things getting to the level of maybe a personal attack, that you're not good enough to contribute here, go away. And just that's kind of my understanding of it. I mean, not being a kernel developer and being a member of that community, some people probably come on and say I'm just completely mischaracterizing the environment over there. So somebody's listening to this, they are a kernel developer, think I'm being too, you know, I'm talking out of my ear, which, you know, I probably am. You know, please come on the show and straighten us out, or straighten me out. I guess the contributor covenant's creator is Coraline Ada Emke, if I'm pronouncing that right, and produces called the. And articles under the heading of the Post Meritocracy Manifesto. So I said, sounds like it's getting more political than technical. And let's hope that this does not have any kind of huge effect on the quality of code. I said, I don't like seeing Linus back away from this even temporarily. We're kind of speculating earlier who would take over. Is Greg Crow Hartman then going to take his position, or is there somebody else out there that is going to step up and is Linus just going to be a spokesman then for the Free Software Foundation? I mean, I can't imagine he could stay away from coding too long, because that is kind of his job, you know, is to work on the Linux kernel. That's how he makes his living. So if he's not doing that and being paid by that Free Software Foundation, I believe it's Free Software Foundation, if he's not being paid for that, will there be a point where, you know, they're going to say, hey, if you're not going to fill this role, is this going to affect him financially, or, you know, I'm sure with the work that he's done, he could probably get work about any place he wanted. And we're really into the realm of complete pure speculation here.
I was going to say, if you want to put on the tinfoil hat, we can always go into, we know that, Windows has been, or Platinum members of the Linux Foundation. Now they all of a sudden going to try to get one of their coders in there to try to control it. There's somebody in there who has some sort of a different background or different idea is going to slip in there and try to take control of things. Good Lord, this button won't stay.
Yeah, I was going to say you're coming in and out, but that is a horrifying possibility, and I can't imagine the community would allow it.
Yep, like I said, that's just kind of the tinfoil hat kind of, you know, Windows is going to try to weasel their way in now that that Torvalds has stepped on the side.
Well, I think the problem is it's been the way it has been for too long, and, you know, gradual change towards having a less confrontational community probably would have been better than say, oh yeah, we're gonna turn on a dime tomorrow, and everybody who can't get with the program has to go.
Right.
Okay. Unless somebody else has thoughts on this, Honky, you had another topic.
Yep. Doesn't give you a path to much shorter dime.
Okay, we can't hear you. That button's just cutting in and out, bro.
Yep. Hold on a sec. All right, hopefully this holds down better. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well,
yes,
clear.
That's much better.
Oh, awesome. All right, so a while back, more recently, I've been using Bodhi Linux for a long time because I like Enlightenment, and Bodhi Linux is a nice Enlightenment-based desktop that's also Ubuntu-based. But recently I figured out that Bodhi doesn't have a clear path for upgrading. So it doesn't upgrade to like the next version of Bodhi. Basically, the only way to do that is to basically nuke and pave and then install the latest version. So I just realized I'm about like, probably about two or three versions behind. So I figured as opposed to just staying behind, I would find something new. And per our discussion last week, I've actually installed Steam and been playing around with some very, you know, like low-grade games. And so I've been searching around and found that Manjaro, well, somebody put together a spin of Manjaro called was it Manjaro Game? Manjaro the Gaming Edition. And basically it's just a version of Manjaro with a bunch of gaming type stuff already, like Steam, Play on Linux, and Wine and some other stuff already installed.
Cool. I take it it's working well.
Just installed it today. Been playing around with it. One of the things that I liked right out of the box was the fact that it found Wi-Fi right away. That's one of the things that really gets me is that when they don't have all of the non-free Wi-Fi drivers installed. So it had the Wi-Fi drivers installed right away. But at the same time, I complain about the touchpad. And the touchpad, I can move the cursor around, but tapping the touchpad as a button click did not work. So I actually had to do the thing, the XKB set, the thing I was talking about the past 2 weeks. I had to get that installed and write the script for that, and I've spent most of this show trying to figure out how to try to either create a cron job or a systemd service to get that script running at boot. But if not, I could still just, I've found a way to just do it real quick. So all I have to do is basically hit the little Windows button that brings up the menu. I can just pay the, you know, push down over to the terminal thing and just type in click, and then I'm good. So it works. I haven't had much of a chance to play around with it too much, but I thought it looked cool. Figured it was worth sharing. It's not, you know, it's not one of the official versions of Manjaro, so you'd have to use the link in the show notes to get it.
Now, have you tried doing update? Will it do updates normally with, I assume, Pac-Man?
Yes.
I'll have to try that. I've got another tower someone gave me, and I put a video card in it as a backup gaming machine. I mentioned this months ago. I think I had the same problem as I did with this machine at first. I got a video card and worked as video, but I tried to play a game. One of the, you know, it was a dual core, and one of the cores was dead. And this other machine, I did originally have it set up to dual boot with the XP that's on there and Linux. And once I installed the drivers for the secondhand video card I got, neither one of them works. That makes me think that, you know, there's something wrong with hardware on the video card.
Wish I had read all this beforehand, but down in the features, it says it has an AUR helper called Yay. And to get that XKB set, the thing to the little program to remap the button click, I had to go pull that out of the AUR. And to do that, I actually downloaded Pikaur, P-I-K-A-U-R. If I knew that the Yay was already on there, I would just use that. So again, for not looking.
Yeah, I've run into that problem, you know, chasing my tail around AUR sometimes. The strangest thing is that usually the tools to install stuff from the AUR don't require elevation. I've always thought that was weird. In fact, if you do try it with elevation, it doesn't work.
Right. Oh, Pacar was that way. The P-A-C-A-U-R. I believe I just did Pikaur a few minutes ago. I believe the way I did that one was a little bit different. They have a way to run it without installing it, where you download it from the Git repository, and then run it in Python, and then see if I can find a command here. Hold on. Yeah, you do Python 3, then ./ pikaur.py, and then -S, and then the program from the AUR you're trying to download. And that was all you had to do to install it. You know what? That didn't require sudo. So that was the same thing.
Yeah, I've always thought it's strange. Here's this user repository out there, and we really don't recommend you install anything from it, but if you do, you don't have to have root privileges.
Right.
If there's somebody from the Arch community who can explain that one to us, you know, please submit an email or jump in the show some night and tell us what the philosophy was behind that.
I guess they consider the AUR kind of the Wild West. I mean, if you're choosing to use this software, it's a non-supported repo, then you take your own risk, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't know. It should be able to install anything. It should require root privilege, right? So how does that bypass that? How about that?
Well, I guess all you need to do is install is, you know, stick this in that directory and that. Well, you know, but yeah, you shouldn't be able to access anything outside a home without having a root privilege. I don't understand. I mean, I was going to say, yeah, it copies a file in, but I guess I've never looked. Maybe AUR just does copy everything under home, but I rather suspect not.
I don't know.
I was just trying. I'm blanking. It's been a while since I've regularly used Ubuntu, the way you install a package outside the repository on Ubuntu. What's that called? Yes.
DPKG? Yeah. Or adding a repo?
The PPA is adding a repo, and DPKG is just installing the .deb file.
Right. I mean, apt-get and aptitude are just a layer over DPKG. I mean, they call DPKG to install. So it's just a user layer over top of those. But yeah, PPA was what I was thinking of. And, you know, even if you boot to install PPA, you need root.
Right.
And add a repo, you would need root because you can't access the sources.list without it.
Right.
I'll definitely be looking at that version of Arch and Manjaro Arch and seeing if I can find a computer to apply that to, because that does look very interesting.
When I was looking at, because I had found the link to the Manjaro game, After I'd found the link to it, I'd lost it and was trying to look for it again, so I went to try to check to see whether it was in the regular Manjaro site. I found that Manjaro was using Architect. I don't know if I told you about that before. I used Architect Linux a way to install Arch using an ncurses way where you basically sit there and you choose everything that you want to install on the system and how to set everything up, and then it basically runs one big script to do the Arch install. Manjaro has an Architect version where it basically does that, where it's an ncurses version, but instead of using the straight up Arch repositories, it's using the Manjaro repositories.
And this, you know, it looks like there are a whole bunch of emulators included, including RetroArch, but SENS and don't know what Dolphin does, but looks like there's some, you know, have you tried any of those console emulators yet?
No, I haven't tried any of it yet. I basically got it set up, got it installed. That's about as far as I've gotten so far. I actually was installing it and updating it during the beginning of the show.
And saw in there that it's got Minecraft. Isn't that still a paid program?
I don't think so. See, I know you can create your own Minecraft server.
Okay, that may be server, not client. I was thinking you still had to I knew Minetest was free. I've played with that before. But I thought Minecraft you still had to pay the developer. Maybe it's been out there so long that they're not bothering it anymore.
I don't know. I've never got into those.
Yeah, I kind of like looking at the add-ons and stuff where you're not building yourself, and you could have airships and cannons and all this kind of thing. I wouldn't mind playing with some.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
You know, I wouldn't want to have to build all those from. I wouldn't want to have to build all that stuff from scratch. I mean, you can go in and do that, you know. But I mean, they're like TNT is actually built into it. But you know, then you have things like, you know, cannon, so you can throw your TNT at another guy, and then you do have lighter than air ships, essentially. And I've seen those YouTube videos where, you know, guys running from the cockpit, you know, to fly the thing, and he's running going down steps and running across the cannon control, and you all have all these fights in air, and they're surface vehicles and stuff Bombing, you could, if the server allows it, you could actually fly over, your somebody else on the server, their home, and you can bomb it, so there's a lot of stuff that's been built into Minecraft that I don't think they ever originally imagined.
Yeah, and I think I could probably get into that, but I'm not sure if I can get into just the building side of it. I think that would go for maybe like a couple days, and then I'd be like, all right, I'm kind of done with this.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there that doing all that hacking. I mean, I can't imagine how, there are places you can go and you just download this ship and that ship or this construct and that construct. I cannot imagine what it would take to just, I would not have the patience, like you said, to just stand there, build all this stuff from scratch.
And most of those like stuff are probably mods or add-ons or something like that you can probably just throw in there and create a general Minecraft server and then add on all that stuff and then you can use the game for I mean what there's did I hear I thought I heard somewhere that they you can do like set up some mods to do racing or like you said fighting and whatnot. It just That stuff would be interesting, but just the building of stuff sounds kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, when I played with Minetest, and this was years ago, and of course it's not the same thing, and there have been some add-ons, but not nearly as much as for Minecraft. I mean, Minetest is open source and everything, but it's just behind. There's not as many people doing stuff, and I was curious what, could you mine clouds and what the clouds are made of? And they said, no, it's just, somebody said they're just made of white. In other words, it's not something you can mine. And so, just to prove that to myself, I'm, over the course of a couple of weeks, I built this tower high enough that the clouds would be going across the top of the tower. Climb to the top, and cloud would go by, and I'd try to mine something out. Nope, they're right. There isn't anything there. And that's kind of why, at that point, I'd been spending too much time with it, kind of lost interest, went on to other things. But yeah, I mean, it does really appeal to the creativity of kids. I mean, a lot, everybody I talk to, their kid who's tech everybody who's technical to know what Minecraft is, all their kids, that's all they want to play.
Joe, are your kids a bit old enough for Minecraft?
Yeah, my son plays a little bit of Minecraft on the Xbox, but that's about it. Could you hear me?
Yeah, we already. And when you play on the Xbox, will you? Because I know people can set up their own Minecraft servers. Can you connect to somebody's server, or do you still have to connect to like Xbox Live and then to some place or something? I'm not sure how that one would
He
go.
was doing it over Xbox Live on that one, so I'm not sure about the setup.
Now, on Xbox Live, do they have the ability to do other things like the fighting or the racing or some other stuff like that, or is it just the general mining and creating?
That is a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, that was going to be my exact same question. Though I do think the consoles are getting better because they've realized, there's all this user-created content for the PC that we can't access. We need to do something about that.
With Xbox, I'm sure they're all like stuff you have to buy on add-ons you have to buy through Xbox Live.
Well, that's true. They being Microsoft, you probably can't do anything without paying for it. So I would think, since it's all Java, and the whole thing about Java is write once, run anywhere. You would think if it ran under one platform, it'd run under all of them.
I'm sure the plugins will run for all of them. It's just connecting to a server that has that available, or being able to add that on that add-on or whatever to the. I'm not sure whether that's a client-side thing or a server-side thing. I don't know enough about the game.
My assumption would be that it'd have to be server side.
I think you're right. Saying it out loud, I think you're right. I think they maybe if you just have the general Minecraft game, and then you have the ability to connect to different types of servers, whether depending on what you want to do.
Now, Honky, on the Manjaro Gaming Edition, you know, I see that it's ISO, so I'm assuming anything that's an ISO can be installed on a PC. But, you know, the top directory is 17.1.12, and the one below that just says x86, and then there's other versions. I assume you got the 17.1.12?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if the one labeled x86 is a stable version or something or whatever, but just want to verify for that for me and for anybody else who's listening who might be interested.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the other two are there. You have the you're talking about the two other TARD versions, the libc++ experimental, and I'm not sure the x86-64. M game, which is the name of the distro, really, .db.tar. I'm not sure what that one is. But yeah, I just downloaded the ISO.
Okay, yeah, that looks like the packages are separate, you know, because I see one for Discord and one for Minecraft, and I don't know if you have to go. You might look at yours and see if the Discord and all that's already installed, or do you have to go to that, you know, that x86 folder and explicitly download the TARs for everything? Because there's the x86, there's like all things that look like individual patches.
Well, it looks like Minecraft's installed.
Okay, Minecraft Latest and Minecraft Server are two of the packages, so I guess I don't understand why those have been separated out, but there must be a reason.
Wow, there's a Sony PlayStation emulator.
Yeah, I thought a couple of those looked at their PlayStation. Also found a
correlation with PSCX?
Yep. There's PSCX2, PSCXR, PPSPP for PlayStation Portable Simulator.
I use the PSCX.
Now, is that like just the original PlayStation, or how far does that go up?
I've only used it for original PlayStation games, so I don't know.
So it says the PCSXR is the original PlayStation emulator, and the PCSX2 is the Sony PlayStation 2 emulator.
Yeah, those are probably far enough back that Sony's legal team is... I'm sure if somebody pointed it out to them, and you know, they'd probably go nuts, but... you know, definitely if somebody built a PlayStation 4 emulator or an whatever the latest Xbox is, and well, I'm certain that's probably within the realm of possibility, you know, and threw them up there online, you would have lawyers, you know, dropping in from helicopters.
Yeah, I don't think it's the kernel on those old systems that bother Sony. It's the actual games, because you see sites that are offering the ROMs for the games that get shut down all the time.
Yeah, and especially if they're offshore, it's probably like a big game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah, so, it's like blocking torrenting.
So you were asking about the Dolphin emulator. Apparently the Dolphin emulator is a Wii/GameCube emulator.
Nice. Of course, I guess you'd have to have Wii controllers and all that. And those have been adapted to PC. So, that's the thing that I was thinking of the other day, that last show we talked about, the guy said, yeah, you can have this as long as you are not a member of this particular faith, then I'd say you can't download it. It was the emulator to make Wii controllers work with PC games.
So there's a lot of games.
And I guess his faith was magically just going to stop people of a different faith from downloading it.
Right, and probably, you know, people guilty about using it, you know, because the guy was obviously a bigot, you know. Like I said, the other example was, you know, back when we were playing with the Zip It 2, probably the most... you know, it was Linux, you know, but the most polished emulator, you know, the guy had some language in there in one place that was not very friendly, and because of that, some people said, yeah, well, I will not download that. I'll download the other and have a lesser experience, a less easy experience to install. But I, you know, I don't hold with that kind of language, and I'm not going to, you know, support it, even though it wasn't done financially. Though, you know, this guy was on IRC, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. So I don't know if somebody got him or went to jail, you know, maybe his proclivities led him in a bad way, or he just decided to quit out of the community, but, you know, all of a sudden we never heard from the guy again.
But it was also interesting that this had Audacity, Bleachbit, Blender, Discord, KDN Live, Lutris, Mumble, OBS Studio, Play on Linux, well, Play on Linux is obvious, but all the other ones installed as well. I mean, Mumble and OBS, I guess they wanted to have it set up so if you wanted to record or stream your gaming, it was already set up for it. And Mumble, obviously, for you know, talking during the game, since that was the original purpose of Mumble. I thought it was cool that all that already set up.
Sounds like a pretty heavyweight distro.
Yeah.
3.1 gig, which is not huge by today's standards, yeah, like I said, I really want to download that and try it on something, even if it's just in a VM. Let's see, I don't know, it probably wouldn't play games very well if you did it in a VM.
All depends on the machine you're running it in, I guess.
Yeah, my machine's not that fat.
During the install, were all of those programs already included on the ISO, or did it go and pull them from the internet?
They were all included on the ISO. You could, if you ran it live off of the USB, you could be able to play all that stuff.
And I assume, since it's Manjaro, anything that's in the Arch repo, you could install.
Right.
Have to admit, that kind of has me jealous. I still have space on my disk, you know, for a true OS, which is a BSD, but, you know, kind of the same idea that we're gonna run Windows Steam games on an open system, and they claim faster, and they run on Windows. Still haven't got that. I understand how to do it now. I talked about this at least a year ago or more when I talked to some of the actual TrueOS guys. My problem is I had been trying to set up separate partitions for you know, system and home and all that. And they said, no, just create one partition, and TrueOS will, you know, will carve out partitions out of that.
I'd be very interested to see what your experience is with BSD. I've heard kind of mixed things over time. So, I mean, it seemed, though, the whole concept that they have with jails seems like an interesting concept. So I'd love to be able to hear your experience with installing and running a BSD version or operating system.
Yeah, I need to do that, especially if it isn't my main one. You know, because the main thing with BSD is, I understand you still can't run Flash, and there's still a lot of content out there on say, YouTube that's just a Flash video. Though, even though, you know, Linux doesn't seem to run Flash very, in general, very well, but at least I think you can do it. You know, there's very few videos I click on. Nope, this won't run. Well, I don't know. Runs on Android. It usually runs on Android, and I throw it up on Chromecast. Yeah, a lot of YouTube videos won't run just in the browser here on Solus. You know, they try to, and they just sit there. So I guess I think other Linux OSs they may do. Probably Ubuntu, which does everything, will probably run it. But you know, so really, at this
Chrome
point,
is actually making it more difficult to run Flash videos. I mean, I have my own LibreSonic server, which I use for grabbing the video podcasts I watch, which granted isn't very many video podcasts anymore. But every time I try to go to the website, I have to manually go in and turn Flash on for that website. And it seems to only last until I close the window.
Now, my Chromebook will run YouTube videos in the browser. It runs them better if I, you know, if I run the Android app from the Chromebook, but it will run in the browser. So that's strange. Maybe it is just a Linux thing. Linux, you know, pulling back support from Flash entirely. Of course, Chrome OS is Linux. So it was funny. I went to a customer's place this weekend, this week. First I messed up, though. They didn't bring me the old computer first. They said, yeah, the computer died. You know, we bought a new computer. The new computer was an HP of like a HP laptop with like a 20-inch screen, I think. You know, the old one was 17. You know, I would thought it was plenty big. This was huge. But I had to backtrack a lot because, after half an hour, they brought me the old one. I left it sit there, and I finally plugged it in, and it came right up. I think the barrel connector is getting a little loose because, you know, I plug in the barrel connector and walked over the wall and plugged the power cord in, and it went back. The barrel connector had fallen out, but I put it back in, and then, system had power and booted up. So I said, I told them, hey, I didn't unplug it. Check the battery. Maybe that was it. No, maybe the battery's no good anymore. I was thinking, well, the barrel connector's loose, and that's why you couldn't get it to work. So, but everything came up, and the problem there was, of course, this is Windows. The whole problem there was didn't have passwords for any of the email accounts, and a lot of them were old Hotmail accounts, and even just putting in the username, so we don't have any user by that name. So after not hitting that account for a while, they must delete the account. But the last one, there was Yahoo, and the last one was Gmail, and tried a bunch of ways to get into that, and then finally, create a whole new account for the user, and then got in the old ones. Oh, there's the Gmail account, and then got into the Google passwords, and even the next oldest email account, even though it was there in passwords.google.com and in the browser passwords, whatever password had been saved there didn't work for Yahoo, didn't work for the Hotmail. So, at least I brought their last Google account back. But already done stuff like got all their banking stuff on there and changed to the new account that I just created, and then had to go, when I found the email account they're using, had to change it all back once I could get into it. But see, I was surprised. I brought my Intel Chromebook along, and because I knew this user did not install any software over top of the operating system. And I said, well, I told him you might as well be using a Chromebook. But of course there aren't any 20-inch, far as I know, there's no Chromebooks with 20-inch screen. I told him, the one drawback of that is that 14-inch screen is about as big as you can get. And this user has some, vision problems. So, the bigger screen. And I said, yeah, but these things are so much cheaper. You know, the Centel one, it's the one I got in the raffle, but if I'd had to buy it, it would have been $400. And I said, you know, this 20-inch HP, it was probably, what, $1,100? They said, no, it was $400. So, you know, I guess things are getting a lot cheaper. I don't know how you could get that machine for $400. I mean, you know, easily I could see a 14, 15, 13-inch laptop for $400. I don't see 20 inches for $400. And I think the thing was brand new. I didn't really look at specs, but it is running Windows 10.
Well, what was the storage like? Maybe it was basically a Windows Chromebook.
I don't know about that. Other than a Chromebook or something like my Pinebook, can you get anything anymore that doesn't have at least 2 or 3 gig of storage?
Well, I'm thinking that if you build a machine that's designed to use, you know, Office 360, 5, stuff like that, you could do a Windows Chromebook.
That's one thing I didn't do. I didn't go look at the specs. I didn't look at, you know, it moved fast enough. I didn't go look at the memory. I didn't go look at the processor. But I just assume that size monitor and all that is fairly new, you know, not a used machine, because knowing these people, they wouldn't buy anything used. So,
I'm just saying that it may be that some, I don't know what the manufacturer was. You haven't mentioned it.
HP.
HP may be putting out Chromebook fighters.
And, you know, they said the old one, oh, yeah, we don't, you know, it's an off-brand. It was it was Lenovo. I said, no, that's not an off-brand. That's what used to be IBM. And they'll, you know, they're kind of, sometimes have been hit and miss, but I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a cheap brand at any point. Certainly not like a name brand. That was the one, the barrel connector maybe not have been seating as well as it once did. Like I said, I should have gone to the about and checked the specs, but I can't imagine there's anything of a 20-inch monitor doesn't have a proprietary video card and good bit of storage, good bit of memory.
It was a laptop and not an all-in-one PC?
It was a laptop, yeah.
Because I'm not seeing anything by HP that had a 20-inch screen. I mean, 17.3, sure, but I'm not seeing a 20-inch.
Well, I didn't measure either one, but, I've got 17s here, and it was, older ones, but it seemed to me it was bigger than that.
Okay, I do see one, but it's like really weird shape. Like, past the back of the monitor, there's like an extra 2 inches. This is called the HP's 20-inch HDX Dragon laptop.
Nope, it was normal clamshell laptop hinged at the back. Maybe I do have my perspective off. It just seemed like the one they had was as big as any of these I have here, and they're 17, pretty much all of them. But, could be wrong. I said I didn't take a ruler to it. I really should have taken more note of what it was, especially what they claimed the price was. Because I was saying, man, I could use something like that.
HP Pavilion 20-inch, but that's definitely not a standard clamshell.
Yeah, though, interestingly, that's how all the original laptops were made, is, you know, you had like a couple inches behind the screen.
Now, I got a side view of this one now, and I guess it could look like a standard clamshell coming up, but then, like, the monitor pulls up from the bottom as well, and you can adjust the angle of it.
No, it wasn't anything like that. Maybe I'm wrong on my scale, you know. Because the one I had, like I said, 14-inch Chromebook, which was definitely smaller than the old one that they had, but still, this definitely, I think, was a bigger screen than anything I have, in laptops at least. Sitting here looking at my desktop, which is actually slower than my laptops, but only a Core 2, but it's got a 30-inch screen, or 31, and I do like that. Plus a secondary 20-inch screen over on the side. And this
was
from
many
years. I
guess it wasn't a very popular laptop.
Well, I could be completely wrong. I'll have to go look, and maybe next time I go over there, I'll have to, you know, I was kind of, you know, I had to backtrack and do some stuff, you know, like I said, because I didn't look at the other computer first, and I had another stop to make that night, and I was just trying to get out of there as fast as I could. So I did, you know, I probably should have written down the model number and, you know, really what I should do. This particular customer, I should write down all their passwords for everything, and I didn't because, you know, as a technician, I probably should just write down everybody's information, all their passwords, because nobody seems to remember it. You know, I have a few customers who finally have, you know, taught them, yeah, you need to put this down someplace. I don't care if you write it or whatever, but, you know, I was amazed. I put Norton on this new computer because her parents had gotten like a 5 license deal anticipating this. And it used to be, you know, you would have a password and stuff on, you would buy antivirus or something like that. And then they made it intentionally hard to get back on. Well, I guess I did. I was able to find the email account and the password that they used in Firefox. Fortunately, they saved it. Otherwise, it would have. Well, you could have gone probably do because I had the parents' computer too. Gone in. You know, I've lost my password or whatever. But it used to seem like you would buy something like that online. And they would do everything to make you jump through hoops so that the average person would never remember their login. And so they, you know, they'd be selling you software you wouldn't use. Because they'd written down the installation or the serial number, not the installation code, which would be needed. But, you know, if you logged in on another computer using that login, then you could just go download. You know, you didn't even need the installation code. So maybe they've got enough complaints that they learned. But I'm sure all you guys have had that experience often enough. Somebody says, yeah, I own this software, so install it on this other computer or whatever. And it's like, okay, do you have the installation code, you know, or any way to get back into it? And, you know, of course, it's your fault that you can't magically magic up the installation code. Because they never wrote anything down.
Yep.
So I had this one experience, and I've talked about this before, but there was a school, and they did, I could, you know, they did have licenses for Office on, you know, every computer in the lab. But they had got all their computers from a jobber. And what he'd done is done the installation on one computer and just cloned that to all the other 15 computers, which was fine at the time because Microsoft really wasn't checking. And then they started checking on updates, you know, and you could update whatever the original one was and then none of the others. And they said, well, it always has updated. Well, so, you know, Microsoft changed their policy. The only thing I can do is uninstall Office from all these other computers and then, you know, reinstall each one individually with a different installation code, which you guys have. You know, I can see it right there. You got the disk, the installation code on each one. And, you know, they looked at me like I was trying to, you know, make a project for myself. You know, they never, you know, you tell them something like that, and, you know, some people are mistrustful. You know, non-tech folks don't understand that. I said, yeah, at the time when he ended, you know, when you got the computers, that was, you know, industry standard, and you could get away with that. And then Microsoft changed.
Sounds like the experience between Windows 2000 and Windows XP.
Kind of like that. I mean, I remember when, you know, you could install any Windows package or any Microsoft package by, well, you had to experiment around, but usually it's like a leading zero and then all ones or something like that, just because Microsoft did not want to deal with support calls. So if you're a tech, you knew, yeah, there's just a generic pattern you could put in and it'll install. Some packages it was all ones, some packages it was zero, you know, all zeros, and then a one in the last place. Most of them it was, I think, as I recall, first digit is zero and then all ones, and it would install. But that's been like, you know, Windows 95, 98 days. Of course, back then, Windows 98, you just need one disk and you install as many times as you wanted. And then Microsoft got greedy. No, I can understand. It's, you know, it's big business. They need to make their money, or they think they do.
Well, gentlemen, I got to say that these old bones are running out of steam.
Yeah, I'm at about a yawn a minute.
All right, so why don't we call it a night?
Yeah, I'm surprised we've made it this long, no more topics than what we've had.
Right.
I'm sure the listeners are probably surprised too. These guys are still talking?
They gotta be used to us by now.
Yes, both of them.
So our next recording date will be October 5th, 2018. Our music is Downright provided by Klaatu and Brome. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server and for the bot module in the IRC channel on Freenode. All I have to do is type in .ns in IRC and it'll tell you the date of the next recording. We want to thank the 00 web host for our web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Kevin Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years. I have been Honky Magoo. With me has been 5150.
Fine, I'll do it myself. Yeah, I've been waiting a couple of weeks to use that one. Thanos reference, nobody remembers? What, no Marvel fans?
None of these buttons work. No, I don't get the reference, I'm sorry. What was it from?
Thanos, I think from, one original Civil War, I think, which a lot of people said doesn't make sense. It would make sense after post-credit scene. It would have made sense after the first Avengers movie, but I think it was Civil War that was actually after. So yeah, did not make sense in that context, I guess.
I don't remember it. I'm sorry. Second night, Joe.
Good night, Joe.
And that minor.
Good night, friends. Good night, Joe. Take care, folks.
Oh, it's 45 long bolt. In fact, use the same barrel and extractor as the Model 73 Colt. It's a fixed cylinder, which was strange. See, what about the first? Well, I don't know if it's even the first, double action Colts came out in 1877. And I think it was like a 38 and a 41 caliber, and both of them did not have a very good reputation for reliability. And then in 78, they came out with a 45 caliber version, based on the same basic design, but a little more sturdy. And then after the turn of the century, they were having trouble with the Moros in the Philippines. And because they were using like berserker tactics. And by that time, the military had actually gone single action army Colts were out of service. And they were using like 38 Smith and Wesson. And this was not, today's 38 Special. It's a little, much less powerful cowboy 38 cartridge. And those just weren't, one of these guys came running out the jungle at them. These weren't powerful enough. Now, these weren't actually issued to the Army, but they were issued to the native Philippine police forces. But when it, at that time, they'd gone to smoking, or rather smokeless cartridges, and the primers on those required more force to ignite, and the hammer spring in the normal 78 model was not quite strong enough. Plus, it might be doubtful if the if you wanted to put smoking or smokeless powder rounds in a smokeless design. So what they did, among other things, is they put in when they put in the heavier hammer spring to compensate, they made the trigger longer and the trigger guard big. And so this is how the visually how that you differentiate this gun from the 1878 model that it's based on. But I don't know why they did this, because it would have been so easy just to reuse the Model 73 cylinder. Most revolver cylinders are indexed by the notches at the back of the cylinder. If you've ever looked at a revolver, and this, I know you have, Detmeyer. This is for the audience who'll be listening to this pre-show, and some of them mad because we're sounding more like tilts tonight. There are as many notches around the back of the cylinder as there are chambers, and there's a little tab that presses up from the bottom. So when you rotate the cylinder to line up with the barrel, or you the next chamber line up the barrel, then that tab locks it in place. But there are some revolvers, and this is one of them. And they all have the same problem, that instead of doing that, they've rigged up the hand, that which is the piece that when you pull the hammer back, or in a double action pull the trigger, which pulls the hammer back. Essentially the back of the cylinder is like a ratchet, and this is the arm that pushes up on the ratchet to revolve the cylinder. And they've got it machined to hold the cylinder in place by that ratcheting part, rather than the more reliable external notch. So I knew this was a problem with this particular weapon, that was kind of iffy, but the guy had advertised it using NRA ratings, and it was one down from the top. Top is excellent, like perfect out of the factory, and the next one is fine. Fine, though, if you look up those ratings, it's more like external finish, and I don't know how he could have got fine out of the finish on this one, because it's kind of, I mean, you can see it's been worn. I mean, they're, which was harder to see in the pictures, but yeah, it's, there's so much play in the cylinder, it's not safe to fire in the condition that it's in. Talked to a few people today, got a hold of a guy who was certified gunsmith, and he said, you know, he'll try it, but it's probably, if it's also wear on the cylinder too, it's probably not going to work. But if it's just the hand and replacing the bushing and the in the cylinder, you know, he thinks there's probably a pretty good chance we can get this workable gun. The site that I got it from does have a return policy, but I realized today, talking to my federal firearms dealer, came to, since I've already, you know, I picked it up the other day, I already went through and had him do the paperwork on it, federal paperwork. So there's probably no way for me to return it now. I would have had to send just send it back when I first saw it, and that would have worked. But I got it, you know, enough cheaper than what they usually go for online that I've got some wiggle room to let somebody work on it. And I guess, you know, if it can't be fixed, maybe it'll be a historical display model until I do find somebody that makes parts for it. So messing around, calling and stuff, that's taken up last couple days. The other thing is, on Facebook, there was a car hauler truck that I was interested in. But there's some stuff over, you know, ownership, because the guy who wants to sell it is not the guy whose name is on the title. And I said, yeah, I can't get into that. If you give me a bill of sale from the, it's old enough, it could be sold with a bill of sale. Well, I said, if you give me something, paperwork from the guy that's got his name on the title, you know, otherwise I am not going to get in the middle of that. So that was another day this week.
What would you do with a car hauler?
Haul cars. I mean, it's the price on it's cheap enough that it's all about even with a bumper pole trailer, much less a fifth wheel. So, you know, just the two or three times a year I haul some junk home, or if I have to haul something in the mechanic, you know, rather than have it towed or whatever, I think I could get my money back out of it.
How many vehicles do you own at this point?
That run about three, four, but ones I've had run and need work, more than that, somewhat more than that.
You running a used car parts there? Used car lot?
I probably should. I told myself I wasn't going to buy any more stuff until, you know, I got the stuff that I had all running again, but you know, things keep coming up in my face, and, you know, like I said, this guy hasn't got back to me on this truck, so it's looking to me like he's not, you know, maybe he's not going to be able to get the right paperwork.
Now, have you played around with that printer yet?
No, I haven't. I've got the filament now, but I have not. I kept meaning to do that, you know, at least print the test thing, and I just, you know, I want to be here where I can watch it when I'm doing it, at least the first few times I print. And it's, you know, I just have, well, I can't say I haven't had time. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I saw on G Plus, I think Gorkon got one that was very monoprice-esque.
Yeah, I looked at that one. It's capabilities, I think, kind of similar, yes.
They look very similar, too.
Well, his, I know, had a big fan on the side.
If I can't get this thing up and running again, I might look at something like that. Or I've heard, who was it? Dave Morris picked up an Ender, the Ender 3, I think, which is, I believe, also similar in style. That might be cool to look at. Now, have you played any more with trying to get Steam games to run with the Proton? Or Steam window games?
That was something else I wanted to do, is pick you know, most of the ones on the Steam-approved list are pretty old. I think the last show I posted the one, you know, the page where you can go, okay, you know, we've independently tested these and they work, you know, the community tested. And some of those are games that I have through Steam. But I keep meaning that, you know, some of them at my internet speed are going to take 3 days to, you know, to download to this machine and install. So I've been waiting for time. Maybe I'm going to be gone for a while or whatever and leave it go. Of course, you can turn that on and off. I'll just be starting that to run when I go to bed at night and turn it off when I start using the internet again.
So I actually installed Steam and was playing around. I'm not sure if I got any games that I had to use Proton for, but I downloaded Steam, installed it, and been trying to use it. I realized I really needed an actual, like, good controller. I have several. I have, like, two of them that are, like, USB SNES-type clones, one that's an NES-type clone, and just nothing really good.
Yeah, I've got a console type controller here that I actually got it for the the one that you put on the Pi. I was going to hook it into the
RetroPie.
RetroPie, yes. And I can move it back and forth, but I don't know. I never did like the console controllers. I also have joystick sitting here on the desk, an old Microsoft one I got second hand, and haven't really gone through see if it how well that works yet. Tried on a couple existing games, and you know that were on mouse and keyboard, and setting it up in that game. What was the tank game I have? But setting it up in that game was complex enough. I said, you know, well, I'm going to go back to mouse and keyboard for now until I have more time to sort it out.
Yeah, so the version of Manjaro I found is a one that somebody had independently put together where it's an XFC version that's just loaded with, like, Steam Play on Linux and, like, a bunch of games and emulators and stuff like that. So I think I'm just going to throw that on this machine. Now, is any of your links talking about the Linus stepping away for a while, or his code of conduct thing that he wants to implement, or whatever that's been kicking around?
I saw stuff today on the code of conduct, but I didn't look into the details of it. I didn't realize what it was causing Linus to step back. So is he saying? Because it's been said for. You know, but been known for a while. If you go into the comments on the kernel, it's just all full of filthy language. You know, and of course there has been some stuff about, you know, female developers maybe get a hard time in the discussion boards and all that. Probably there ought to be a revision to the code of conduct, but and maybe we should save this for the show. I don't know, is Linus stepping back because, you know, if there's going to be a politically correct code of conduct, he doesn't know how to deal with it, or he wants to draft a code of conduct?
I'm honestly not sure. I was kind of hoping that you'd read it, but I haven't. I just kind of flipped into G+, and there was like four or five postings about Linux. Right here, I got on the verge with Linux founders stepping back. It's all stuff, sort of comments about it, but I haven't read any of it yet. You know what? Let me see if I can find a link to this.
Okay, and while you're doing that, I'm going to make sure I don't have any links saved on my Chromebook in the other room. Yeah, there's only one D in addition.
Yeah, I think we should get into this actually after we officially start the show. The one thing I see on the Verge article, it doesn't say who is going to be moving into Linus's position. I mean, is Greg going to move from unstable to stable and somebody else move in, or somebody entirely different? I'm not that up on who all the kernel maintainers are.
That's a good question.
Okay, I've got all my links that I have that are new, which aren't, unfortunately, aren't many this time.
All right, we want to start this thing?
I'm ready to.
All right, let me... All right, I know you hosted last time, so I'll do it this time.
Okay, great. Too bad Joe's not here tonight. I have a topic I wanted to go over with him.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio-only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio! Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, and that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org. Or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Ridge, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like the gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.